This is the Empower Podcast, released May 22nd, 2023. Episode 633, Engineering Optimization.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble from Kitech Electronics. And welcome to the Luddite Hour.
It's Dymo, damn it.
It's Dymo. So I was telling Dave before the show, my buddy was at a car show and there was this very quote unquote realistic DeLorean that was there. And I was like, actually, the labels don't look correct inside of the flux capacitor and on top of the time meter. So it's not. Yeah. So yep. very big nerd moment there. But then Dave and I were wondering, like, what are those labels called? We didn't know what the name of it was.
Yeah. And I tried to get out Noel, but it turns out it is actually a Dymo, but I remember them as maybe there's some other brand here in Australia, yeah, maybe. Right. And that's why I'm thinking of it.
Right. Right. And if people don't know what we're talking about, it's like that plastic strip. It's an adhesive back. And then you pressed the letter through the plastic strip. And then because you were deforming the plastic, it made it a different color, usually like a lighter color, because the plastic was deforming. And that's the look that we all
associate with this thing. Embossed look. So they call them an embossing labeler or
tape.
Embossing labels, embossing tape or whatever. Yeah. And they were always horrible. Like they were always, they would crack and they would fade. They were brittle. The adhesive sucked on them. But it was a thing, right? It allowed you to make labels on the spot and it was magical. Yep. And we just found out you can still buy them. Dymo sell a new, I'm going out and buying one straight after the show.
Getting that look. Yeah. That vintage
that
look.
That old school embossing. Because I hate the modern. Have you got a Dymo label printer, one of the new, plastic tag ones?
Yeah, I have one. Yeah.
And they're just
They're great for like horrible. I actually really like the ones where you can like label cables and stuff like that. There's like certain ones where you can like go you can go vertical and then like label a cable. If you get the certain type of wrap, you can label a cable and stuff. Like it is super useful. All the stuff they make is super useful. But it doesn't have that certain something where it doesn't fall off at some point,
And I find it's one of these like really low end, like they practically give them away, right? They're like $20 for this label making machine. You get them in the local supermarket, right? They give you a label making machine. You're actually buying the tapes, right? That's what you're really buying. And they give you, they almost give you the label maker for free, right? And they're built down to a price. Like they must manufacture them for like $8 or something, right? They're like so cheap. And like when you use the thing, like the LCD fades, like they haven't even got a voltage regulator in there, I don't think. So the LCD fades when you push the
button. You're talking about the newer ones, right? You're talking about the newer ones?
Yeah. I'm sure you can buy like the higher end expensive industrial ones and they're great, right? Sure, but the cheap ones, which is all I'm ever going to buy because I'm not doing labels in volume or whatever. If I do, then I'm doing
like a production facility,
paper labels or whatever, or I'm doing my, I'm using my desktop printer, Dymo printer thing. But handheld labels, you just buy the crummy little machine and they're all just dinky little things and the user interface is horrible, and oh, God.
Yeah.
But anyway, it do work, but barely.
Well, I guess we'll just continue to be Luddites then, huh?
Yeah. Go back to old school embossing.
Old school and embossing. Speaking of old school, I was enjoying the episode from last week. Microchip has new school as well, but hearing the about the hundreds of varieties of PIC16s, I'm like, oh wow, that is
No, there's over 2,000.
2,000
varieties of 8-bit PIC micros.
Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah, it's 2,000. Yeah. It's
So I had some things that I wanted to bring up with you because Steve's time is very valuable and I was not on that show. The first one, though, was mostly around the tooling stuff. So, he mentioned, he thinks that people should still pay for tooling.
This is a big argument. This is all in the comments. It's all over the forum. Okay. It's everywhere. Yeah. Everyone's
first question
talking
is,
about that.
What do you have to pay for? I didn't realize that
there was still. People think you have to pay for the tools. You don't. All of the microchip tools are free. Okay. They're completely free. There's no limitations. The only thing you have to pay
for is your imagination.
Is he fully optimized? When you compile something, there's various optimizations. How much code optimization do you want? Okay. And I think it's the first. Don't quote me, but like the first two levels of optimization are free. But if you want the highest level of code size speed optimization, that's what you pay for, right? You're paying for it because they do actually use the open source GCC compiler for the 16 and 32-bit micros, right? Yeah. Technically, you can go download it, right? You can go download the compiler and you can, you know, it's kind of like hard to do, but you can do it. So, yeah, but anyway, their tools are free. So they're just paying for the optimized.
So the IDE
thing is
free. So this is MPLAB. Yes.
This is the MPLAB thing. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So that's free. But then if you want to get to the, so basically they're like gating a feature with the price thing. What do you know what it costs?
It's $49 a month, $44 a month, which is not a lot, right?
That's not a lot at all.
Not a lot. Okay. But the argument people are making on the forum is that, I will refuse to use their tool because it's not an open source tool chain that I use. So I don't want to pay if I have to support a client for the next 10 years. I don't want to have to pay. Yeah, very fair, right? I don't want to have to pay to monthly or whatever. Or you can actually rent it for 1 month. You can just rent it for 1 month. Do the update for the customer using the highly optimized, compiler setting, and then you don't. Then
what do you
only
do
pay
if
the $44
like, bucks? Buy it, put it in your CI/CD tool chain, and like so
yeah,
that every.
I don't. I don't know if you can do that. I don't know if you can rent it for a month and then take a snapshot copy of it.
That's kind of a bugger. That's
yeah,
a bummer,
I'm not sure if you can do that, so I'm not going to say if you can or you can't because I just don't know.
Okay.
But of course.
All right, so I vacillate back and forth on paying for tools. Obviously, I'm very principled when it comes to ECAD tools, of course. And then
I have no problem paying with tools.
Other times,
paying
I'm
for
like,
tools that I
okay,
use.
You know, like really, like you know, I look at my hourly rate. I'm like, all right, if it saves me an hour, it's like if it's less than the cost of an hour, it's literally a no brainer. It's like here's my credit card.
Well, $44 right is less than an hour of any engineer's time. Right.
Right,
it's 10 minutes of an engineer's time.
I'm sure that's what Microsoft's banking on too.
Yes,
but I think there is a valid point in there of like not owning the tool and like expecting it to be part of your tool chain. Like that is more significant. I think you know like that's a big deal because that's messing with you. Like there might not be anyone to call at Microsoft in 10 years. Like the person mentioned on the forum as well. Like
right.
So that is a totally legitimate argument.
Yep.
But I think that's separate from. The should you pay at all? There's some people that are just like, I won't pay for anything. It's like, all right.
Fine. Go and use something else. Yeah, but the thing is, it's free. Like, how often? I think Mike from Mike's Electric Stuff commented on the forum about this, and he said, well, I don't, in the 20 years he's been using PIC micros or something, I don't think he's ever, I think I kind of, well, I have to put up, I'll put up a link to the exact quote.
Yes,
anyway, he's saying, there's never been a case where that paid optimized, where that highest optimization setting, which is the one you pay for, has made or break a project. Because you can always rewrite your code in some way. You know, if you don't want to pay for the massive optimization setting, well, just spend an hour optimizing your code a bit better. Hand optimizing it, you know, like fine, you know.
Sure.
So
yeah, I think other things that come in my mind around this is like, all right, so first off, it's a market system. You don't have to use it parts. That of course comes with an extreme caveat of like, well, sometimes actually you do have to use it because your company says so, or you have legacy products built on it, yada yada yada. So like there is always the other thing there. I think that's why they probably can do this. There is there is some lock-in with vendors. Stuff like that. So they are there is just always lock in with choosing a particular vendor. And if they put a paywall in place, you're just going to pay the tax and move on. And it sucks. But
well, I will actually say, I do believe you can actually, because as I said, these tools are free, right? And they actually use the GCC compiler, right? So if you're doing the PIC 16 or PIC 32, I believe they use the GCC compiler, which of course is free and open source, right?
That's right.
So always, so you can snapshot that product and you can still use it in 10 years time, even if Microchip go bust, right? They don't exist anymore. Right? You can still use that tool. No problems whatsoever. But you may have to get a workaround if you want that highest optimization setting. And that's all it is. That's literally all.
That might be how people work around it with like a CI/CD anyways, right? So like,
And apparently the workaround is quite easy to get the highest optimization.
Search the
EEV
blog forum. Dave won't say this, but I will. Search the EEV blog forum. I'm sure you'll find it on there.
I'm sure you'll find it. But anyway, like I would be complaining, right, if the code was limited to a certain size, right? If you've got a 128K part and the free tool only does 32K or something, I'd be complaining, or it only supports half of the peripherals,
That is historically how some of these tools did it too.
Some of them have worked. Yeah,
Kyle did
some
it.
Kyle did it. They all had like free versions of the tool.
I think Code Composer Studio does that too. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. There's a whole bunch of them.
Basically, to the bottom of the range of the tools.
AVR ones back in the day, I think. There was maybe that was a third-party one. I remember using that, and I had to fit it into the free code limit because I was too tight-ass But that's the thing. There is no limit here. There's no size limit. There's no memory limits. There's no part limitations, right? You can use every single part. It's all free. It's just the optimization. I'm not buying the complaints or that. Like, I understand where people are coming from. And if it is a really huge problem for you, well, don't use Microchip. Okay, I think it's blown out of proportion.
I think the other thing about what Steve was saying is Steve also said, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve said in the show, we think we should charge because otherwise it gets left behind.
It becomes a cost center. The term he used is it becomes a cost center.
I don't think that's true, though. Like, this is
I have no reason to doubt it.
A marketing tool for other people as well, right? Like all of these things are marketing tools, right? The reason they do it is because they want to make the developer experience easier to use their product. Whether or not they achieve it, arguable, but they are trying to make it so that you can, they want you to get to Blinky as fast as possible, and God bless their hearts, they're trying, right? I mean, like, and that is a marketing cost, and Steve's right, it is a cost center. But I don't agree with the fact that like we have to charge in order to do that. Really, it's we have to take a stand in an organization that this is something we prioritize. And he said like, oh, well, managers are going to like trim the fat and that's going to get rid of your tools. But that's a decision internally. And like saying that we have to charge to do this is, I feel like that's a false equivalency.
Yeah, but when a new CEO comes in, when a new manager comes in, what are they going to do? They are going to cut things. That is why they were hired. You don't change CEOs.
Just charging,
you don't change managers. Yeah, well,
sure, but just charging for it's not going to stop it.
You know what I mean?
Like a hard charging CEO that's just charged with just there to like cut costs. $49 a month or whatever is not going to change your tune either, right? It's not going to pay.
If that cost center is making a profit, they're not going to cut it, right? They have a harder decision cutting it. It's also a mindset thing.
Maybe a harder decision.
Right?
I don't agree with that. Steve Sanghi has been doing this for 31 years. He's the CEO of Microchip. I am Chris, the lowly EE.
Exactly.
I don't agree with it, but it doesn't mean I'm right. You know, like, so that's,
no,
I'm just saying, I don't agree with that.
I said on the forum. I said, look, he's been doing this shit for 31 years, right? He knows a tad more than big company politics.
I don't agree with that generally. So,
okay, fine. Well, I think it's also a mindset issue, right? If you have the mindset issue that, oh, we're just going to like leave it up to the open source community to do GCC, right? Even though we're doing our own tools, but if you don't keep up that seriousness, you know, that gets into your mindset, and then you sort of like drift towards the point where, well, you go, well, let's just not bother putting much effort into our own tools anymore. Yeah. Let's just leave it up to the open source community. And,
some of this does touch near and dear to my heart, right? So like this is basically, developer relations is what I do currently and what I've done in the past. Mm. And like one of the problems is like, where do you stick someone like me in an organization? It's actually, there's many, many blog articles about it because I cost money to go to conferences and I cost money to do all the stuff that I do. Fine, whatever. But me and people that are...
Everyone at home, Chris is talking himself out of a job here. He'll be unemployed next week.
Hey, you know what? I am very good at firmware now, Dave. So.
Right. Okay. Right.
yeah. But I think it's legitimate because at my old job, when I was in developer relations, but part of marketing, like then it becomes a cost center, and it's like, it's tougher to justify. Right. And it's like, I think the same thing goes with like, so like what we're talking about here broadly is like it's often referred to as developer experience. And it's usually people much smarter than me that can actually write tools. So like VS Code plugins and stuff like that. Where do you stick them? Do you stick them in the engineering org? Do you stick them in the sales org? Cause it helps make sales. Do you stick them in the marketing org? Because it helps promote how easy it is to use your parts.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's really important to basically wall off that developer experience thing and commit to it, like you were saying. And say like, look, this is important
to
our company.
It's about seriousness. That's right.
It's about seriousness.
And I think at least trying to charge some money for it is your way of signaling to everyone that we're bloody serious about this.
I disagree with that because of the norms only. Like,
fine.
That's a valid point, but I think the norms don't match that. But I see what you're saying about the seriousness. That part I can get behind at least, but
I'm not going to be critical of it. It is what it is, and if they want to do that, I don't really have a problem
with
it.
He can do whatever he wants at this point. Yeah, like we said, 31 years, you know. But
this is why I don't, you know, look. Yeah. I don't see what the big problem is. I don't. I just don't get all the
people
uproar
are talk
about
on the internet.
You know?
Dave. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, because people want free shit. Okay, and everyone else is doing free shit. So Microsoft should do free shit. They are doing free shit.
Microchip.
It's all free.
Microsoft is not doing free. Well, they do some free stuff, but
dude, it's all free. Yeah. Go and use the compilers. Yeah. They're all free, right?
Yeah.
It's only if you want some whiz bang optimized setting on the compiler that's what you pay for.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
All right, cool.
I don't care if my code is
Dave's email address
7K or 8K. You know, I don't
send complaints to hr@eevblog.com, and that will go into the appropriate spam inbox.
I don't get it. Anyway, it's funny to see people. Yep.
Overall, really great interview. I enjoyed hearing Steve. He was great. Glad he came on. So
It was great.
He was a good sport.
Yep, it was. Yeah. We were very lucky to get the hour because we had to I had to slot into his calendar. So
busy guy.
Yep, and we saved the audio just.
Yes,
I'm recording a backup this time.
Yeah, we started. Started backing up recordings.
Zencaster. Oh, I don't know.
Yep.
Works 99.9% of the time, and then the one big show that you do, the critical one want, and they screws up. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh well. Yep. Anyway.
Let's
Are we
do...
all calm down now about tools?
I think so.
All right. Breathe in.
Let's switch into announcements real quick. KiCon or KeyCon, whatever your chosen flavor is happening.
Dude,
again.
It's KiCad. We've been through this. You've even admitted it.
September 9th and 10th.
Are you still saying KiCad?
A Coruña, Spain. I'm just going to ignore Dave here. Luckily, I'm the editor this week, so I can just blank him out.
Right.
A Coruña, Spain, which is in the northwest corner of Spain. There will be a conference. It's actually being run by the Services Corporation. That's Seth and Wayne, the two of the lead.
Oh, right, as in the KiCad Services.
That's right.
Division, I guess. Is that a thing?
That's right. Yeah, I mean corporation. Yeah, they're a company. So there is a talk proposal now, and that'll be September 9th and 10th. Mm-hmm. I will not be there personally, but I will be at Embedded Open Source Summit, June 26th. I think about a month from now. Let me look at my calendar. June 26th to the 30th in Prague, Czechia.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm excited. I've never been to Prague before.
Oh, yeah. I've heard it's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposed to be very, very great. Yep. So, So that's like a combo of like the Zephyr Developer Summit and like Automotive Linux and a bunch of other stuff. So,
right.
Yep.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah. That's it on the conference front, but in the automotive front, since we're talking about automotive there, I had a bit of a a fun interaction.
Tell us.
So I posted our noisy CAN bus.
Yes.
Episode from I think 2 episodes ago, and someone wrote back to me on Mastodon and said, "Never in my 30 years of working on CAN bus have I ever heard so many wrong things." And I'm like, "Who?" I'm like, "Who is this joker?" And then like there was an article that I was ready to talk about like that following week when we were supposed to record about this awesome thing we're about to mention with the CAN bus, and I was going to mention it. I was like, "Oh my god, he wrote that article." I was like, "Ah, crap." Anyways, Ken,
I don't even remember what we said about CAN. I don't even remember.
We said it because we were talking about, like, I mentioned that, like, I was starting to work on some CAN stuff and just CAN's really noisy. And Ken told me I'm wrong. And then he came on the show and told me how wrong I am and in a very, very nice way. So Ken will be the episode next week. So people can hear it next week. Little teaser there. And this is the article that I was talking about. This was going on the internet, but it was basically someone who, one of his friends, Ian, basically had seen that his headlight had fallen off, or like that someone had like peeled away the stuff from his headlight.
Oh, and, okay, like a rubber seal or something, or
yeah, like or like the paneling, the plastic paneling, right, like just below the left headlight. And he's like, "What is going on here?" And like, did somebody hit me? But it was like on the side of the street, so it wasn't.
Right.
It was like something about it was like they wouldn't have been someone hitting him. And then he kept noticing it, and then he got a notice from his car that it had been stolen because there was some like.
Right, because everything's monitored and everything's right.
So apparently car thieves can now buy these devices on the black market, and they look like Bluetooth speakers, but they're actually CAN hacking devices that basically send a signal to your engine that say, "Hey, you've just been unlocked." And that's how they steal cars now.
Wow.
Yeah. It's first off, fantastic article.
Yeah, hang on, how do they physically connect to it though?
So they peel back the paneling.
So they go through a headlight or they go through a
So the headlights are all CAN devices now, right?
They used to just be CAN devices. Oh, God.
Yeah, they used to just be like a light bulb, but now it's got all these crazy microcontrollers in there, whatever, to have different modes. And
they've got a micro in every single headlight.
Everything, yeah. Yeah. So we talk about all that stuff next week.
Right.
But first off, so people should be prepared. Go and read this article. I'm trying to find it now in our thing here. Is it so long ago I didn't post it? Oh, I feel stupid.
Yeah, I was just thinking that the other day. Like, how does someone steal my Ionic EV? How do they steal it? Like, you know, you would have to have serious hacking tools to, you know, to sort of.
Yeah, so I mean, so basically there's a message, like a CAN message. So I think they block, again, this is a question for the next episode that I will have not. I've already recorded it when we're recording this one, so I can't ask any of the questions you're about to ask me. I think there's like a blocking signal based on CAN bus that Ken talks about. He wouldn't tell me exactly what it was because he doesn't want to make it easier for people to make these devices and sell them for like $5,000 or more.
So they're really expensive.
Yeah. They're really expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Bluetooth. No, man, I don't know where this is. Anyways, I'll find it.
That's some serious investment on the part of the criminal. It's almost hats off to them. They've invested in the tools required.
I'm improving my career. Here's the video here's the link in the chat, Dave. But
I certainly can't fault that.
They're made for specific cars. They inject these. So basically they block other devices from transmitting and then they just blast this unlock message.
Oh, okay. So you can block so you can take over the bus.
Yeah,
so to speak. Basically. So there's some sort of command that goes, "No, hey, I'm so mega important. Everyone else, shut up and listen to me."
Guess what's inside this Bluetooth device?
Yeah, one of those.
Pick 18.
Oh, pick 18. There you go.
Thanks, Steve Sangi.
Nice.
Anyways, fantastic article. Really, really good stuff. So,
okay. Yes, this looks comprehensive. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I assume that every car would be different. So any, like, universal hacking tool would have to be programmed with, you know, 100 different models or something.
Yes.
Would that be right?
We do talk about that too, because so that's another thing I bring this up again next week, but this is weird. This is like Back to the Future for me. But, you know, I brought up as well that like the reason it looks so noisy is most of the time you don't have the decoding keys for different manufacturers. So like you're saying, it's different car to car. Like it's different, not just for what would unlock each car, but also what what the engine's different readouts are, you know, like how they actually bit pack.
Yeah, totally. And they'll all use different smart keys, and they'll all use different, you know.
So great article. I'd say read it before next week, and then Ken will be on, and it was a really good show. So
cool,
excited right. about That's, that. Yeah,
that, down, that sounds good. All right.
Yeah. So what else should we talk about now that I've spoiled next week?
All right. Well, what's on the list? Do we have anything on
the list? I have no idea. Actually, I have something that's not on the list. I was thinking about.
No. Hang on.
Nope.
I will put a link to it. Hang on. Let me get the link. But a former guest of the show, Vincent Himpy, who's done the 3 hour, what, 3 hour show or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Our longest show to date.
Longest show to date, which we don't do anymore because we do try to limit to them
And it was like 2 a.m. my time, too. It was like insanely late.
Right.
Back when I was in Cleveland. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. Yep. And, yeah. He has left Tesla. He was the former head PCB designer at Tesla.
Yeah, yeah.
Spent 8 years there, and then he went to a space company who shall remain nameless. And then he's now looking for a gig. So if you want to hire the former head of PCB design at Tesla.
Come on, man.
Yeah, he put a job ad on the EV blog forum.
Don't give him free job ads. You know how much that's worth? This is free advertising.
We should be paying for this shit. Yeah.
He should be charging paying
for this shit.
I mean, I guess he did give us 3 hours of his time. So we'll put it against his tab.
Yep. I'll find the link and I'll put it in here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking about what are the first things? So like, I was thinking about reference designs and like, I was rebooting up an old reference design, dev board basically. Mm. And like all of the things that you get on a dev board and then like, okay, so now I go and put that chip. I've decided on that chip that I've tried out the dev board. I've tried all of these different things. I've talked to my firmware engineer. I've talked to everybody. Everybody's cool with it. I've started the design. And then what are some of the things I was thinking about? Some of the things that like, my past jobs have been, and probably what other people would be, but like, what are the optimizations that you have to do once you have decided? And it's also part of the deciding process as well, I suppose, of like what chips to do and like, what are you then optimizing for? So like power, especially if you're on battery, cost, if you're still on the chip choosing phase. I've done a
recent video on this. This would be all part of your selection process. You don't go, you usually don't go, well, I'm going to choose a microchip part and then figure out the lowest power micro in the microchip. Well, you might. Some people might do that because they have the tools, the experience, or that is the company verified microcontroller, right? And and then you have to live within the constraints of, I've got to use this brand.
It's somewhere between the dev buying the dev board and, you know, doing the layout, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But even past that too, right? You might have other optimization through there. But I was just thinking about like all of the optimization exercises that you do have to do there. Like you said, part choice is a huge one. But then thinking about that also bleeds into power and battery, or sorry, power and cost.
There's.
I was
cost,
also thinking
there's,
about
there,
like
there's availability.
Data.
There's package.
I was thinking about data usage. That's something that might be a little bit later, I suppose, maybe in the firmware stage. I was thinking
what
about
do you
like
mean,
if you
data
were,
usage?
Like if you were a cellular device, you know, I've been doing a lot of cellular devices.
Oh, okay.
Stuff,
right. Okay. Yeah.
So that's like an optimization as well. But other like very common ones you'd say. So you're space, I guess space is a good one, right? Because that's often.
Well, then you would go, do I have radiation hardened parts? Do I have extreme temperature rated parts, for example?
Ah, that's a good one.
You know?
Because
not all manufacturers
like
offer
then, right?
extreme in industrial or larger, temp ranges. So
yeah, that's a good one. I would say I was thinking like Keithley days as well, like specsmanship type stuff. So like, can I hit my? I guess in that case, it was analog specs as well, right? That was
If you need a built-in analog to digital converter or DAC or something like that, is it one of those little crappy ones that doesn't meet the, you know, that has crap specs, or is it, you know, fairly decent?
Right. Or you're building your own, right? That's
right.
Stuff test equipment does. And I was just thinking about, like, what, as we enter this age of computers, computers, smart, I don't want to say the words. As we enter this age of fake smartness, is that good? We'll call it FS instead of AI.
Yeah, because there's nothing really intelligent about artificial intelligence. It's
so, like, where are the value props of the, you know, like, especially as, like, electronics become more accessible, which is good. That's what we want. So then the optimizations are the things that people are really getting paid for, right? So, like, an analog engineer is getting paid to get that extra, you know, effective bit out of the measurement.
Yeah, right.
You know, circuit all the way through the thing. And the engineer at the toy company is getting paid to take another cent off the BOM because you multiply it by all the devices and it's like a huge savings, right? So, like, what are the people getting paid? Well, the optimizations are what people are ultimately getting paid for as engineers, I think. Because the ones that aren't doing that specialized knowledge, I think, are either going to, maybe there'll be some AI tools, fine, but probably more likely, you know, just offshoring is more likely. You can just go to any generic old dev house and just be like, I just need this thing that is a Bluetooth speaker. Okay, no big deal, right? Yeah, we know how to do that. You know, and then it's just a race to the bottom. So the engineers, the optimization piece is really, that's what you're paying for, I think.
You are, but what's changed? Nothing's changed in the industry. Everything's still the same. This has been around since day zero, you know?
I'd say the accessibility of offshoring is increasingly easy.
Also, the accessibility of this kind of stuff that you work on. Like, if you want to do something complex, like, you know, talk to a cellular network and, you know, do all that sort of jazz, right? If you did that 10 years, if you wanted to do that 10 years ago, you were in a world of hurt.
Oh, you're in a world of hurt. That's right. Yeah, you're basically trying to get a hold of Qualcomm and, you know, I guess there was modems back then too, but, like, you're in AT command sets. You're not, you know, more and more. So, like, ST has a new integrated cellular part as well, right? Which is crazy.
Well,
and,
I can just give you an example with my unfinished micro supply, right? Sure. It was with the USB-C power delivery standard, right? The power delivery standard back when we started that project, that was a difficult pain in the ass, right? Now it's just getting easier and easier and easier to integrate power delivery into your products. You can just buy a little 8-pin Asian micro that just does this power delivery
just
for you,
it,
and it's all handled. Whereas we had to use a 32K ST micro part just to handle the, you know, the power delivery thing, and then the library for that. The power delivery library from ST was like 30K or something. It was enormous.
Right.
And it was just,
So I would say bleeding edge. In that case, that would be just like general bleeding edge. Now, that you guys were not bleeding edge, but you were ahead of the curve.
We were probably a year or two ahead of the easy stuff. Stuff now, you can buy a chip. Yeah. You don't even need to program it. It just has pins on it, and you can just strap one of those pins, and it gives you a certain power delivery standard. It just does all the negotiation. It's all pre-programmed. Everything for you.
Right. So how about this? Pre easily available silicon, or like a function in silicon or something like that, right? So, like, one of the examples I always give in that case is, like, you know how you can just buy an off-the-shelf thermocouple chip these days that's, like, really good, like, really, really good. And then I, like, point at the old Jim Williams app note where it's, like you can just buy the silicon equivalent of Jim Williams did.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And it's like, maybe it's a little bit better. But even still, like, or you could say, like, that extra, you know, maybe the Jim Williams thing was still a little bit better than what you could buy today. But the leap from a piece of silicon and just plopping it down on a board and actually doing all the stuff that Jim does in AppNode 18 or whatever it is. It's significant. It's like, it's a step change in terms of needs and capabilities, whatever. So definitely an optimization as well.
It is. This is just the continuation of something that's been going for 50 years, which is application specific ICs, right? If in the mid 70s or something, right, you wanted to do an
boost
analog
converter.
VU bar graph, right? If you want to do an analog VU bar graph, right? There was a lot of stuff, a lot of circuitry. Yeah. You know, you're designing an audio thing and it's got to have a graphic analyzer, you know, or it's got to have a sound level meter LED bar graph. Yeah. Fancy pantsy, right?
Yeah.
And then the LM3914 and 3915 came along. Right, and the 3914 would do linear, the 3915 would do log. I think I have that correctly, if I'm remembering from 30 years or 40 years ago. You know,
His brain is aging, folks.
I'm pretty right. I reckon I'm right. LM.
I bet you're right too. No, I bet you're right. I bet you're right.
Day's memory test live. LM3914 is the analog, and LM3915 is the log. Is the log version, I think. Anyway.
Take that, ChatGPT. Bastards.
But, and it's just a continuation of all these application-specific ICs. This is why DigiKey and Mouser and all the others have, you know, 500,000 different devices. Because there's an application-specific part for everything. They just keep coming out with it. This is why back in the days of Maxim, right, Maxim had to release a new data book every 2 months or something, because they came out with 200 new application specific chips.
Yep.
Right. It's just,
it's crazy. Yep.
And so it's continuation of that. I don't see anything different. Sorry. It's just, it's been around forever.
No. I mean, you're right. It is no different. I'm just saying, what is it today? Right. Where are the lines today? Right. So another example. So I'm staring at my desk, right? So right now, a lot of machine learning, tiny modules, tiny ML machine learning. Tiny machine learning is like a thing that you can go and train a model.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For a very specific robot task or something.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Or what you can do is you can go and buy. So I got to meet Pete Warden, the guy from Useful Sensors, and they sell this thing called the Person Sensor. And it's a camera and it's a chip on the back and it's got I2C output and it just spits out whether there's a person in the frame or not. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, is what I need.
That's exactly what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that'll be in a future design of mine. I'm excited about that. But that's the same thing where it's that 30 years ago would have been.
Oh, that was an entire design team.
It's a PhD whatever. 10 years ago, it's still difficult, but becoming more accessible. But today it's by a Person sensor and stick it on your product. It's got a quick header on it. It's super simple. Like, that's amazing.
Well, I can remember back in 1994 when I worked at KeyCorp, or was it 95? Right? We worked on, we had a box that would convert a computer's VGA output to an LCD screen. Right. So people take it for granted these days that you buy your LCD monitor, right, and it has a VGA input and everything else, right? They just take it for granted. Well, back then,
these days it's kind of tough to find VGA input.
Well, but you know what I mean, right? The box to do it was enormous. It was the size of a pizza box, so we actually called it the pizza box because it was physically the size of a pizza box. Massive board had chock full of it had 100 chips on the damn thing just to convert. Sure. 640 by 480 VGA into drive an LCD, right? Just to sample that and re-encode it and drive a parallel LCD back then, right?
Totally.
It was whereas now it's a single chip. Yeah. Now it's just a single chip. You just buy it and there's little converter boards that just do it and, it's nothing. Yeah. But we were probably 2 years too early on that. Right. That was the early, a few years after that, it was everyone's doing this now. Here's Winbond or somebody did a chip to do the whole thing. Right.
Yep. I did see an art. I didn't put it on. Maybe it was on the list.
Don't be ahead of the curve, people. You guys just wait a couple of years.
You can be ahead of that's the thing. If you are ahead of the curve, that's when you get paid. That's what I mean. Right. Being ahead of the curve, that's you paid. But I think what happens then is on the other side, there is another side of the curve as well, where once it falls out of favor, and so this is what's happening now as well. I don't think it was on our list, but I saw that the chipsets that go into car radios no longer have AM tuning in it. And so you can no longer get AM radio in a lot of cars. And it's so now there's going to be a secondary market for either devices
AM chips,
or AM chips, right? Because there are still AM transmitters in a lot of places.
Was it the AM 510? Am I? No, I've got that wrong. What was the was the AM?
I just think about there's a bunch of like cheapo AM FM, you know, like all in ones. You know, it's just basically again you plop it on your board, antenna input, you know, audio output sort of thing. And I think even it's like PCM or like I2S output.
The MK484 is one of them. It's an AM radio receiver in a TO-92 package.
Oh, I think they're a little past that, but
anyway, there it is. 80 cents at JCAR.
Nice.
The MK4A AM radio receiver, literally in a 3-pin TO220. TO92 package. That's just brilliant. That's great. Yeah. Chip of the week.
Yeah, sure.
Stable operation operates down to 1.1 volts. You can operate from a single bloody cell.
Who would ever go that low? Who would ever go that low? It doesn't make any sense.
Man. Great. Yeah.
Well, we got a little off from where I was figuring we'd go with this, but
I think,
yeah, yeah. I'm curious, like, if people think there's other optimizations out there. I'm just generally curious about this because, again, I've been building cellular stuff, and I think about like most people get a cellular thing on the bench, and they're like, okay, I got to get the data cost down, I got to get the power down, and I've got to get the the cost down, and the cost down is pretty tough, but because cell modems are generally pretty expensive, but you could switch modems. But that's going to keep dropping, right? I mean, that's part of what it is. So you could try and get ahead of the curve and maybe do chip down yourself. That's how, so like you think about that sort of thing too, right? If you have a cell modem, most of the time you're buying a module it's got a big metal can on it. Somebody has done all the testing. You could get ahead of the curve a little bit by doing chip down, doing all your RF testing. If you had enough volume, it might make a lot of sense. But most people aren't willing to do that sort of thing. But that's how you get ahead of the curve on the cost basis sometimes.
Right.
Yep. All right. That's all for me.
Yeah. No, sorry.
You're right. It's not that different, but I'm just saying I've been thinking about it. So that's why I brought it up.
Okay. Fair enough.
What have you been thinking about, man?
Not much.
Yeah. Right.
That's what happens, folks.
These YouTubers, they're just kicking back. Enjoying their profits and hanging out on forums.
Yep. Boy, come on. There's got to be something on the list.
Oh, there's definitely stuff on the list. Let's see. This one's good as well. Powering a Nixie tube. So from a USB with a 10 cent RISC-V. This is Charles Lohr, CN Lohr on YouTube.
Nice.
Amazing video. This one, is this? Yeah, this is Charles. Yeah. So basically, he actually references your video as a.
Yeah, because I did a whole series on doing the designing the Hixie tube counter.
He's actually talking about the CH32V003.
Oh, okay. Oh, that one. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, that, yeah.
Yeah. Basically,
what
Dave went through the dev tools. Yeah. But this is actually another good example that we're talking about there. So you and I bought this chip, and you went and did the off-the-shelf tools, and I'm like, I'm going to wait around for someone else to write tools, and Charles now has a tool set that he built around this. So
nice.
If you want, you can go and do, what's it called? CH32V003 Fun. There's now like this library that helps you to develop for these 10 cent RISC-V chips. So that's
sweet.
Something people can go check out.
Yep.
And the, you know, the build's really awesome. And spoiler,
are they available in volume now? Because there were when I did my video.
Yeah, they were hard to get.
Right. Yeah, they'll be hard.
I've seen mixed reports. Nothing.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. Spoiler, Charles will also be in the show soon.
Oh, excellent. Well, we've had two former guests. We've had Ben Jordan and Bill Hurd.
Oh, you're talking about the list
Hurd.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. And
Eric as well. Eric's also been on the show.
Oh, yes.
Eric.
Yes, he has. Yeah, so I was, they've done a... they didn't streamed interview talk. I was actually invited to a vintage computer conference in San Jose, which is coming up.
Oh, really?
In August, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. So, yep.
What's the that would be VCF? Cool. There's Vintage Computing Festival.
Yeah,
there's
everywhere.
Like a West and an East.
Oh yeah, there
is there.
Oh, there's
I don't
tons
know what the big
money.
One is though. I think East is the one that I usually hear about in Virginia or something.
Anyway, there's one in San Jose at the Computer History Museum in August.
That's fun.
Yep. August 8th or something like that. Yeah, it'd be nice to go to.
When's the next time Dave is touching down on American soil, though? I heard you're not allowed from the State Department. Is that true?
No, I'm allowed. I can come in.
Are you sure? Yep. Are you sure?
Yep.
You want me to check with your local embassy?
Anyway. They've already got me fingerprinted, the bastards.
Yeah, and everybody. It sucks. Yeah. Everybody who comes in the country now. It's crazy.
It was that way 20 years ago. I was getting fingerprinted. Was it? Yeah, I was getting fingerprinted 20 years ago going to the States.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, man. Yeah, it's been around a long time. Jeez.
Disreputable Aussies. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's new on the forum?
Oh, well, I can look. I can call up the new reply. Oh, no, I can call up the unread replies since last post, and people are still talking about pick and place machines. They're still talking about the Neodens. They're still talking about hacking the Rigol scopes. They're still talking about, you know, like the
same old, same old. Yep.
A thing that has been getting a lot of views for me lately, in fact, it's standing out, is like just cheap ass tools. Like,
oh, you mentioned this, yeah. And you said you were gonna do kind of cheap stuff over other stuff, right? Like.
No, I didn't necessarily say that, but like that's where the views are. I mean, if I look at my last 20 videos, the largest number of views have been just actually reviewing cheap stuff. Mm. You know, it's like
what's the last cheap thing you did? It was the scope.
The Zotec. Thing, right? It was the Zotec ZT702S oscilloscope. I think
that's
kind of
interesting too, because that's like an optimization.
Yeah, it's It's only available for $80, I think, something like that. Yeah. You might even be able to get it cheaper than that.
But it had a bunch of like weird stuff, like weird issues. I was watching that. Oh, that's right. Because I was watching that and I was thinking about the first round of Contextual Electronics I did. I told people to buy this like breadboard scope, which was a total bust, built on top of like an Atmega.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Like, yeah.
Oh, what a, I mean.
Right.
They tried, but it was, you know, it right, was like no, maybe just, 20 kilohertz bandwidth. It was just like,
I get
really
that all
not,
the time. Like, should I buy this little $50 pocket oscilloscope? And I'm going, just no,
But I watched this thing, the review did, and like, that would have been okay. You know, like if you can get to a megahertz and you can have multifunction like that. Okay. You know, like that's not bad. I don't know. It is tough at the bottom of the market, I think. And, you know, and like, sorry, there's another edit. All the boards on my desk falling off.
No, that's great. Keep it in.
Yeah. You know, like you and I are, you know, men of means. We are further along in our careers and, you know, a $400 scope doesn't sound like a lot, right? It actually sounds kind of affordable.
But
like
but it's
to a student, it's like $400 scope. Yeah. Are you serious? And I need other stuff too. Like, yeah, no, it's like, it's tough to like put a whole lab together, especially when you're starting from scratch, you know.
Yeah, dude, I couldn't even give away oscilloscopes.
When
I did my Keysight draw, right?
Oh,
and I gave away five scopes. Only three people actually replied. Other two people didn't want it. They didn't get back to me. It's like what? What? Seriously?
Maybe they just don't check. You know what you should do? You should start asking for mobile numbers instead of emails. I bet that would work.
Yeah,
I bet that would have 100% hit rate because it's You know, Dave, kids these days, they just don't check their email, including myself. I stopped checking my email a lot. So
anyway, unbelievable. You know,
2 months from now, they're going to be like, crap. Yep. I could add a free scope.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's tough. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. I did discover a new fandom. I discovered, because when you start talking about low-cost tools, the lower-cost tool, the more rabid the fan base. There has to be a name for this law.
Dolphin thingy?
No, dolphin.
Have you
thingy?
The dolphin? We'll come back to that. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, dolphin. No. Okay. Or no. Slipper. No. No. Sorry. I'm flipper. Talking about
the flipper. Flipper zero.
Oh, the
not dolphin.
Flipper. I have got a flipper now.
You do. Okay.
Yes, yeah, so right. I've got a flipper zero. Yep. It's
the
like
dolphin is the logo. That's what it is. Okay. I'm not a total idiot.
Yeah. Right. Anyway. I don't see the attraction to it. It's like, I don't know. Like it couldn't even do any of my garage door keys because they're all rolling encoded or whatever. Like it just can't do them. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
I think
it's one of those things
flip
where
the petrol cap
cheap.
On a Tesla. You know,
it's
like,
cheap enough. And then
it's like $300. It's not cheap.
It's cheap enough. That's cheap enough. As a hacking device, that's cheap enough.
Oh,
in the
hacking
world,
it's cheap.
Right? And then some stuff does work. But I think the thing is, most people are not willing, you know, like any kind of new vulnerability comes up or new things discovered, people then do patches for their equipment and they're like, okay, well then basically this is like the physical incarnation of like script kiddying, you know? So like if I can't, you know, if you have to go program it yourself, that's tough. That's a tough thing.
Right. Of course.
That's an optimization. Yeah. And like, but like, you know, but if you could just download it, then there are some things you could, that's like what people want to do. They want to buy it and have this like this magical hacking tool. Well, sorry, folks, you have to actually do work.
It's not that magical. Great. Like it can do some cool stuff, but you know, like,
well, the hardware in it is flexible, and that's what you really need. Yeah. But if you have to write that, this is like, I bought a HackRF and I'm like, oh yeah, I have to like know how to use this thing.
You have to actually do stuff,
you know,
to
like,
make it work.
You have to actually know how to use it, right? And no limits of that. Like, okay. And then I actually have a use case where I'm not like doing research or trying to do malevolent stuff.
Right. Yes. You got to spend a lot of hours at it. Yeah. You don't, count the time invested. Anyway.
All right. So, rabid fan base of
rabid fan base, which increases with the drop in price. So it's an inverse relationship of rabid fan baseness.
You didn't have a specific example, or do you have?
Oh yeah, I got a specific example. I don't know if this is the most recent one I did, but the cheapest tool I did it recently, which is the Fursey HS01 USB portable soldering iron, right? So I actually did review video of that, right? It's like $30. And I thought, this is pretty cool. It works. You know, it's $30. It's reasonable build quality, everything else, right? And then, no, entire comment section flooded with it. No, the Pine 64. You've got to have the Pine 64. So all of the TS100 fanboys, and I thought they were rabid, right? They've all moved over to this Pine 64, which is like an open source version of the TS100.
Yeah, and so they make Pine 64 makes RISC-V chips and beefy RISC-V chips, like really significantly, like serious stuff. All right. So
anyway, the Pine 64, and they go, don't you know it's only $23 and it's the duck's guts? And it's like, dude, thanks for telling me. You know, like, the comment section was just flooded with it.
So
like,
is this the Pinesol? Is that what you're really talking about?
The Pinesol, sorry, yes.
Pinesol.
Sorry, yes, okay. The company is Pine 64, I think.
That's right.
Yes. And
so basically, they're just buying the exact same hardware and then changing the chip or the board. It looks like the exact same hardware.
It's slightly different to the TS100, but it's similar. Okay. I don't know.
Oh, I meant not to the TS100, but that $30 one you're talking about.
Oh, right.
It looked
like
the same
tips,
like the same resistive tips that you're driving.
No, it has different. Does it have the same tips? I don't know.
I thought so. Yeah.
Yes.
Similar. I did watch your video.
Yeah. Right.
Something I can't always say, but
yep. No, that's pretty cool. I think they're the Heiko TS12 or whatever tips. Yeah.
So the Pine stuff is interesting. I mean, like I said, the board, I forget what the boards I bought, but it was like the Buffalo chip, Pine H64. Oh man, they got a lot of,
they got wearable stuff. They got Internet of Things. They've got tablets. They've got smartphones. They've got a Pine phone.
Right. They have a Pine Raspberry phone? Pi, Raspberry Pi,
Pinebook. They've got a laptop.
Yeah. Tablets. What did I buy? God. Was this that? Maybe I'm thinking of a different thing.
Anyway, I'm looking through there. I'm just looking through their website now, and holy crap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. They make a smartphone. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
What am I thinking of? Maybe I'm thinking of something completely different. This looks like this is tied to Rock 64 too. I don't know. All these names. I'm not a fan, Dave.
Right.
But it does look like they're putting a lot of, like, basically they're going into OEM shops and then just making a slightly better version that might be open source. So, like,
right.
You know, like the stuff that's in, you know, the molding is very similar to other products that you can get on the market in China, right? You can just go and, like, like line up with that sort of thing, but then customizing it on some level, ostensibly on the circuit boards.
Anyway, it's cool. Okay. Yeah, fine. Pinesol. Soldier 9 of the week.
Pine store. I did order something from the Pine store. What the hell did I order?
You did? You must
apparently
have ordered like a
I'm searching
single,
my email.
Single board
computer
or something.
Computer. Yeah.
Yep.
Was it
the
OX
64? The Star 64?
Yeah, OX 64. That's what it is. Yep. I didn't realize the name. I thought the name of it was the Pine thing.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. They just got a ton of stuff. Anyway.
I mean, like look at this thing though. Like seriously beefy, right? So this is actually like a crossover chip, I think.
It's a 128 meg thing for $8.
It's got an 802.15.4 because it can do Zigbee. It's got Bluetooth. It's got Wi-Fi. It's got a camera interface. It's got two RISC 32s and a RISC 64 core in there.
Nuts, right?
164 megabit. Megabit? Is that right? Yeah, 16 megabyte flash. And so pretty sure it's a, it's like a crossover chip. I haven't done anything with it. That's the thing. Like, I buy these cheap ass boards and I'm like, oh, what am I going to do with this thing?
But, I've got a tub full of cheap ass dev boards.
But this thing is a beast. I mean, like, and it's all RISC V as well. So that's pretty cool.
Crazy.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Too many options these days. I don't like options. Options make my life hard.
So I have a thread I think I mentioned a couple times on here on my consulting forum about like my learning goals. And I think the advice that kept coming back to me, which I think is very, very important, is like, you got to have a project. Got to have a project. Obviously, you talk about that too, right? And I've just got to have, I don't know though, like all of the, every time I think of like a new project, it seems trite to me. Like I'm like, oh, I can just go buy that thing. But that's what I need to get over. I need to get over that. Like I could just go buy it. Of course you can go buy it. You can go buy anything, right? But you need to do it just because I want to do it. And that's where I'm struggling. I'm not sure what I need. I don't need anything enough. You know, there's not anything that I need to optimize enough that I'm like, oh, I should go build that. Yep. You know?
Yep.
So I asked ChatGPT today. And it didn't help me. I'll be honest.
It didn't help you.
It didn't help me.
Your personal therapist couldn't help you. Okay.
That's right. That's right. That guy is kind of useless. I don't want to be mean, but kind of useless. I don't know what to do though.
Ask Bing AI or something.
Yeah. Oh, ask a different AI. I guess I should just ask
a different AI.
What should I build?
Until you get the response.
What should I build? I don't know. Like all of the things that I asked, like I was asking all these things that suggest too. I'm just like, GPS tracker, digital weather station, smart garage door opener, e-ink display reader, smart mirror, drone, handheld gaming device. Like,
are these the examples it gave you?
These are the examples it gave me. That's the thing. It's just like processing, like probably like it went to hackster.io and it's like crawling those. And these are popular products, like totally good thing, but I just don't need any of this stuff in my life.
No, exactly.
You know, like home security system. Well, no. Digital thermostat. No. Fitness tracker. No. Bluetooth speaker. Like the thing that I need least in my life is a Bluetooth speaker. Right. Solar tracker, smart light switch, automatic pet feeder, no pets. Home automation system, wearable health. I just don't need anything to these things, Dave. I don't know what I need. I don't need anything technological. That's the thing.
You need to go bush.
What do I need? Yeah, I mean, what do I need? I don't need anything.
You need to get outside and touch grass. That's what you need.
I did that today, Dave. And you know what?
Excellent. What?
It didn't give me a goddamn idea.
All right.
I still don't know what to build.
Yeah, but it's the act of touching the grass in itself that is the... That is the fulfilling part.
Don't try and get all zen on me. You're not.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I do think it's a key part, right? It is a key part to have like something that's driving you. There's something you think you need to build instead of buy.
Yeah.
I can just buy all this stuff, though, you know?
I know. Yeah, I know. We're just getting lazy in our old age as our years get shorter and shorter.
We just have less time and effort to invest. No, here's the thing. I build reference designs for a living. You know, like, this is what I do.
Yeah, but you're getting paid. Some schmuck's paying you to do that.
I get paid. That's right. And like, and so now I'm like trying to come up with a thing for myself. And I'm like, who's going to pay me? You know?
I'm going to take some of that money that some schmuck paid me to then go buy the thing.
That's
kind of
what I think about. There's that. Yeah, I could go buy it, right? But then it's also like, well, maybe I should just do a consulting project instead. You know, like find someone who needs me to build something. I don't know, Dave.
Yeah.
Anywho, I'm going to keep learning regardless. But the search for a project continues. I think the other thing too is I don't have any other hobbies that actually need this stuff. Like my hobbies are like, like learning Spanish, playing piano, like no electronics there, no electronics in those at all.
And some things I just don't need an electronic product for. Like I just, on my second channel, I just did a mailbag unboxing and test of one of these e-scooter things, right? Because they sent it to me, like, you know, and it turned up in the mailbag. It's like, well, okay. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, okay, it's fun, but no, I'd rather ride my push bike because I actually get exercise, you know? Yeah, exactly. And doing the same task, you know?
Yeah.
It's like...
yeah. Also, I see a lot of schmucks that wipe out. I just saw someone wipe out tonight on the sidewalk.
Nice.
Yeah.
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 Brilliant.
Good luck with that, folks.
Yeah. Oh, well, they're banned here anyway, so, you know.
Are they? Oh, that's probably the right move. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yep. Anyway.
What are you doing with the scooter now?
No idea.
You got the scooter.
I can just ride around the underground car park, you know. The kids can play on it or something. I don't know.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, well. Yeah.
I mentioned last week about the beeping buzzer sound. Did I? 2 weeks ago?
Beeping buzzer sound?
That video's up now. I recorded a video finally of me. I mentioned I recorded the Mario theme, or like I put it onto a buzzer.
Oh, right.
Remember we talked about buzzer versus piezoelectric?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's available now if people want to hear it. So
cool.
What was the thing you said about Flipper Zero? So you have one and you've tried it and it does work? Or it's not worth it?
It does work, but it doesn't do things like my garage door remote,
my car remote.
These are like encrypted rolling code things, and it's not some magic hacking tool that just bypasses all that.
No. Right.
Right? It just...
Yeah, even like, Mr. Robot,
I can see it.
It's
really cool. Like, it's got a spectrum analyzer on it, right? So you can see what frequency it's transmitting at and everything, right? And you can actually record it, I think. So you can record the thing to... But you can't replay it. Well, you could. You could record it and replay it. But there's no point because it doesn't have the encoding to do the rolling secure code thing. So it doesn't, you know... Anyway.
Yeah, it kind of looks like... There's a lot of YouTube videos about this thing.
I basically got caught up in the Flipper hype, so I ordered it months ago and it took months to get here or something.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of videos here.
And then I thought, I can open someone's Tesla door cap, you know, fuel cap with it, right? Charging port cap, fuel cap, cap, right? And then, so I went through all the libraries and store. And once again, it's not one of these, like, you've got to try and find someone on some forum somewhere who's actually written the script. Like, and I couldn't find the Australian Teslas because apparently they're different to the US, which is different to the UK, which is different to Europe, which is different to blah, 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 right?
Right.
So I couldn't find the Aussie. So if somebody knows where I can download the Aussie Tesla thing, I can go around and flip Tesla doors on it. But, you know, yay.
Woo! Woo!
So it kind of looks like did you ever see that? I forget what the name of it was. It was like basically like, an I am me. That's what it was. Mm. You know, we had like all the security people on. We should have more security people on the show. We haven't had them on in a while. But like, the I am me was like this, it was like this pink texting toy, basically, where it was like over 900 megahertz.
Right.
Do you remember that thing?
I think this
must be this is like the natural inheritor of that thing. So I remember like Travis Goodspeed had one, and I think Mike Osman might have had one. I saw him at a couple of conferences and stuff like that, but they stuck out because they were like this like super bright, like Pepto-Bismol pink plastic. It was great. Yeah. And then I think this is like the natural, you know, inheritor
evolution
of that.
Yeah,
exactly. But it's the same chipset, I think. I think it's like the same analog front end or like RF front end on it as well.
I do want to take it to like a local shopping center or something and then use it to like turn off TVs and stuff like that. You know, like go into a TV shop and just blast with the infrared remote control. Apparently it's got the universal TV be gone kind of codes in it. So it'll cycle through 200 different manufacturers' codes of off. So you can just turn off every TV or something. Apparently that'll be cool.
Yeah. Mischief managed.
Yeah. I don't know if I should record that or not. You know, if I should actually take a hidden camera and like film me switching off, you know.
If only you had Google Glass, Dave, if you could.
Right.
Smart glasses, right?
Yeah.
Recording glasses. You should get some of those. Get some of those.
Yeah. All right. They're developing a new version right now.
Right now. Yep. Exactly. Oh. Exactly.
Yeah. It'll have AI in it. It'll have a chat GPT interface. That'll be the new
thing. Right. Except they'll call it A-E-Y-E, A-I. All right, we should probably stop recording now. What do you think?
Yeah, we're done. Catch you next time.
Bye.